This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Over to you.
So with meditation as a life experience, so what are we looking at? What are we doing? Where are we going? So when we consider the whole, say, framework and scope of meditation, you're really looking at, on an experiential level, you're looking at, say, like an inward journey, you know, moving inwards into one's personality, one's feelings, one's views, one's opinions, and into the full makeup of the self. Because how can you basically realize the nature of self unless you move through the self? So without getting overly complicated, so we're moving inwards. We're moving into the experience as a human being, especially on the feely level, emotional, intuitive, sensitivity level. Because as all of you are well aware, meditation makes people more sensitive, compassionate, more the emotional intelligence increases over time, and you know, one becomes more sharp, aware, mindful in day-to-day life, and one's good qualities, you know, the good qualities of human beings start to shine forth as the years go by. So you know, even for someone who has practiced even for 12 months, you know, it's completely obvious that there's something, you know, this person is different from, say, from people in mainstream society. Not to say that, you know, people aren't born with goodness or aren't born with good qualities, because we all have past karma. We come into this life with, what would you call it, past life experience, qualities, sort of like makeup, things that we've developed, in previous lives, good qualities, the nature of a good human being in general society. So as we move inwards, we become aware of the full range of emotions, preferences, one's loves and hates and likes and dislikes, because the thing is, in essence, that your emotions are going to teach you about the nature of the self, about the nature of personality, the nature of the human being, because you can't comprehend the nature of the universe, of the world and the universe, unless you actually move through the self, because all the answers, all the knowledge, all the understanding is inside you. So as the scientists are sending rockets and these incredible satellites to other planets, which cost an absolute fortune, billions and billions of dollars, all the major countries of the world, that they're moving in the wrong direction. Instead of going out, all the answers are within, the inner journey. So one sends one's awareness, one's consciousness on this, internal journey, moving in towards the center of the self, and then you realize and transcend, you actually see exactly what the self is made of in, very like deep and profound meditation. So, it's understandable when you look at the nature of human society. We tend to go, the whole thing with internet, computers, with phones, Facebook, Twitter, all these other multimedia social networking platforms, our attention is, with these kinds of things, our attention is going out, it's going out for hours and hours and hours every day. But and why do we do that? Without getting sort of overly technical, we're going out, looking for things, looking for happiness, satisfaction, interesting things, stimulating things. But, what we're actually, we may be moving in the wrong direction, going out on an excessive, to an excessive degree, because it doesn't really amount, when you look at the full lifespan of a human being and you come towards the end of your life, you're running out of time, moving outwards, it's not the it's not really the right direction on an ultimate level. So as we move inwards, which is not necessarily as easy, it's definitely not a walk in the park, so to speak, that when it comes to spiritual life, meditation, being free from stress, anger, hatred, jealousy, just slowly over time, it's like we're a pebble in a stream, and the water and the pebbles around us just slowly grind us down. This sounds a bit funny. Smooth off the rough edges, and usually after about 5 years, 5 to 10 years, most people start to become like smooth pebbles in the stream of life. And it's easily 5 years. You get someone who's meditating for 5 years, they're usually in pretty good shape, they're quite a good human being, and they have good qualities inside them that are very, very apparent. I mean, I meet even with some of the lay disciples who don't necessarily do, actually I wouldn't say that, they wouldn't do an excessive amount of practice, but they're like, they're like Devas reborn, very, very soft and kind and very sensitive and intuitive. They're not the average person walking the streets. You can see very, very quickly and very clearly what sets them apart from, say, mainstream society. But, that person will be shaped and formed by all their past experiences, all their past development. And so in essence, as we live our human life, and especially all of us who are well into middle age, we're minimum 50, 60, it's becoming very clear that we're running out of time, so we really need to spend a minimum amount of time each day on spiritual practice, because this is the reason why you're here. You know, if you understood the nature, if you understood the profound nature of mind and body and the universe, there's no reason for you to be here anymore. You know, all the doors are open, all the questions are answered, and so that's when you will come to the end of the path, because you know, you've realized one's internal nature, the internal nature of mind and body, and through that you understand the deep, profound nature of this world and the universe. And then when you know that, when you have that comprehension, then one's spiritual journey on the Buddhist path especially comes to a complete end, or karma and rebirth will come to an end. So let's see, what are we going to do with the meditation now? Let me think. Okay, we'll do something different. I'm a bit of a salesman with this dark colour, say light perception meditation, but what we'll do is maybe we'll just try to get some sharpness. We'll do a little bit of a feely-feely meditation. So I want you to find a comfortable spot in the body, maybe about no more than 1 inch square. So find a comfortable spot in the body. It can be anywhere whatsoever. It can be say two fingers touching together. That can be a very, very, very clear and obvious point. Or it could be, you know, maybe one's toe on the ground, or a point on the knee, or, well, you know, whatever, maybe a feeling point, you know, 1 inch square point in the body, which is very, very clear to you. And then we'll focus on that for, say, maybe for about 10 minutes. We'll get ourselves grounded in the physical body, and then we'll do 20 minutes of, say, the Anapanasati, the breathing meditation, focusing around the mouth section, which is quite sharp and clear. The feelings are very, very strong in that area. Okay, so get yourself in a comfortable position with your back straight, your head upright. Make sure there's nothing tied around the throat, around the waist, and make sure you can breathe fully into the chest, into the lower chest. And so find that comfortable spot in the body, no more than 1 inch square. Will make it reasonably sharp, and I want you to focus on that point for the next 10 minutes. So as you focus on that touch point, just try to keep yourself as emotionally and physically relaxed as possible. Okay, so now we'll move across to the breathing meditation for the rest of the session. So I want you to focus on the feelings around the mouth, because it tends to be very, very clear. Sensations are quite strong, so very easy for you to track. And the feeling of the breathing will be right on the edge of that point, so your attention doesn't wander very far at all. Just fairly clear. And so just focus on all the feelings around the mouth section, and you'll feel the breathing, the sensation of breathing, right on the periphery of that area. We'll do that for the next 20 minutes. So if you find that the thoughts are still quite prominent, it's a good idea to understand where these thoughts come from, which are really driven by your emotions, your emotional energy. So if you're thinking about a certain thing and it won't stop, you need to understand why, you think about this, you're attached to this on an emotional level, because that's where we tend to get stuck. And because the more you understand your attachments within the mind, the easier it is for the mind to relax and slowly let these things go as the years go by. Okay, so we're coming towards the end of the meditation. So just look back and see what actually works for you in getting the mind peaceful. I'll ring the gong 3 times. You can open your eyes when you're ready.
Well, thank you, Venerable, for, I'm sorry, thank you, Ajahn, for a most peaceful meditation.
Glad to hear it, Chris.
What would you like to do? Would you like to continue with the talk, or would you like to take some questions?
Yeah, I'll take any questions, would be fine, and then if any of the disciples have got a talking point, we can discuss that.
Right, certainly. So does anybody have a question now that they would like to ask?
I guess I just ask the question of
Oh, please, John, that would be wonderful. John, can you just speak up a little bit, please?
Yes. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for leading the meditation. I just got a really obscure question. I'll try and paraphrase it. With the breath meditation practice, I noticed that there isn't actually any particular process that one learns how to practice the breath meditation or samatha practice, whereas in the UK, I remember reading Ajahn Brahm went to a retreat in 1971 where he learned a practice taught by an ex-monk called Nai Ruman called Samatha, which I think was a practice very common in the Thai monastery in the 60s, and then they basically got influenced by the Burmese Vipassana Samatha practice, and that sort of died away. And I'm just wondering, Is there such a practice, you know, when you were starting out, that, you know, one would go through steps in learning a sort of a samatha breath meditation?
Yeah, with let's see. I hope I can make it clear. So what I would tend to do to basically circumvent like excessive complexity, what I would do is just focus on say being mindful, aware of the breathing process. So with the breathing meditation, you're essentially focused on the feeling of the breathing in the physical body. So you know you do have I haven't looked into it for a long time. There's certain Burmese and Thai styles of doing Anapanasati, but the bottom line is, you know, you can get very conceptual, you can talk about different steps and this and that and this and that, but the bottom line is what you're actually doing is being aware, hopefully consistently, from roughly every second to second, of the feeling of the breathing. What you're trying to do in a nutshell is focus on the feeling of the breathing, you know, which, you know, you can do it a dozen different ways, but that's the bottom line. But the thing is that you you know, just sustaining attention, just sustaining attention on the breathing, really, it's only half the business. You've got to, you know, so for example, if you're thinking excessively, you know, you may have strong feelings, strong thoughts, which are quite obvious in the mind, and you know, just placing your attention on the breathing just over and over and over again for 1, 2, 3, 4 hours may not necessarily be effective enough. You really have to understand yourself on an emotional level. So you know, if you didn't have this thinking process obstructing you, you could just go into really profound meditation very, very quickly, you know, easily, within 60 seconds. You know, if you once the thinking process stops, you know, the gateway is open, you can just go into deep meditation, you know, 60 seconds flat, very, very profound state. So it's not that you don't have enough mental energy, you don't have enough focus, your mind's not sharp enough, or your faculties aren't developed enough. The bottom line is it's strong thoughts and feelings which keep the mind active, distracted, you know, keep you attached to different things in the world. You know, so when you don't have that, automatically you just go like down a deep well. Just imagine just, you know, straight down 5 kilometres, 10 kilometres, straight down into a deep, deep, deep well of peacefulness very quickly. So this is why you need to understand oneself. You know, the samatha is only 50% of the business. You've got to develop you need to understand yourself emotionally. It's really, really crucial. Meditation, so the breathing, walking meditation, even things like mantras, to a degree, mantras, you know, anything which is based on sensation is going to be a feely-feely. It's going to be a feely-feely process. And mantras, it might be a little, you know, it's a little bit more conceptual, a bit more like thinking orientated. But the bottom line is, you know, if you still have excessive thinking, strong feelings in the mind, you've got to investigate and understand these things, because if you don't, they're just going to keep, you know, you're looking at lifetimes that come, you know, you could have 2-3 lifetimes where certain moods and feelings, certain, you know, attitudes and ways of seeing the world were very, very strong. You know, you just can't shut this stuff down in even in 3 months, 6 months. It could take you 5 years, it could take you 10 or 20 years to settle certain activity in the mind. So the sooner you get very sharp and very quick and very experienced and knowledgeable with investigation, with your vipassana, understanding the nature of the self, one's personality, you'll get better results over time, because on an ultimate level there'll be more power, there'll be more mind power with investigation on an ultimate level than there will be just constantly trying to focus and focus and focus on the breathing or the walking meditation or focusing on a mantra. You know, you can just bang your head against the wall for, you know, 5-10 years. It's only, you know, it's not satisfactory. It's only the samatha practice, it's only 50% of the business. The really crucial thing, samatha is a course for insight, for wisdom, but the bottom line is, no matter what you're looking at, whether you're looking at precepts, meditation, development of wisdom, it's the insight process which is the key, because samatha alone, just raving on and on and on about samatha, it doesn't cut the ice. And to give you an idea, as many of you are aware, the Buddha's two early teachers who had the 7th and 8th arupa jhanas, which are the most incredible meditation levels of deep, I mean, profound meditation you will ever know. Even the upachara samadhi will blow most people away completely. You know, you do that for the first time, it'll completely blow you away for, you know, for months and months and months. You remember it clearly, even 20 years later, 25 years later, it's still clear. Let's see, without losing my train of thought. And even then, they hadn't attained enlightenment. So you've taken the samadhi meditation approach as far as you can possibly take it. You can't go any further than that. Seventh and eighth, arupa jhanas, and for Nirodha Samapatti, for the Nibbana element, you've got to have wisdom. You can't get there without wisdom. So, you know, you can get fully enlightened with the first jhana. The Buddha stated that in the sutras. So no matter what you're doing with your practice, you've got to make sure that the insight, wisdom, understanding is there at the same level, regardless of the tradition, regardless of the style or whatever you're doing, because that is the peak point, that is the pinnacle of all this practice, what you're doing. And if you're not developing insight and wisdom, you're really just, you're wasting a lot of time. You know, we're 50, you know, we can be 50, 60 years of age and, you know, you don't have a lot of time left. So don't, Achyam Brahm has always done very well with samadhi, both samadhi and insight, right from when he was a lay person, before he actually joined up. Was very effective on both sides. And on an ultimate level, you know, you've got to have jhanas. The Buddha stated that very clearly. You've got to have at least upachara samadhi, but the Buddha didn't state that. Some of the forest masters state that, but the Buddha only stated the jhanas for attaining enlightenment, and he said it over and over and over again. So samadhi is important, but you will get there faster with insight. You've got to have both sides of those faculties developed, and that's the fastest way to get good results with this practice, regardless of the tradition, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think I understand that it's clearly both sides of the coin, but once you get to that level of concentration, then you can develop that insight, and that comes with wisdom and understanding. And obviously, as I understand it, if your meditation practice develops, then as you read the sutras and your understanding becomes more profound, so it sort of follows, one follows the other.
Yeah, to a point, but it's not like it just doesn't come naturally to you.
No.
You've got to know what you're doing with your tools, with the skills, with your faculties. When you do meditation practice, it's just not going to fall into your lap. It doesn't happen like that. You've got to be, you've got to be a resourceful human being. And this whole thing, concentration, it's not about, samadhi is not concentration at all. It's stillness. You know, once you stop thinking, you automatically go into deep and profound meditation. And the level of energy that it takes to get to reach those profound states, it's nothing, absolutely nothing. You put your attention on your index finger, on the tip of your finger, that's all it takes. It's nothing. So don't, this kind of thing, like talking about concentration and, you know, it's just nonsense. It's stillness. You stop thinking and then you'll understand it immediately. But the bottom line is, without being a parrot, the bottom line is, you've got to understand how to basically wind the thinking process down. How to, you know, through insight, less and less and less and less thinking, strong thoughts, strong feelings. Because as soon as you settle that, as soon as that becomes calm, becomes still, you know, the jhanas, it's an automatic process into the jhanas. It happens naturally. The only thing which stops you is thinking, which is driven by emotion. Any other questions at all?
Yes, we certainly do. Melanie and Christelle, would you like to ask a question? Unmute.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ajahn. I've got a question because now I can see when I meditate, there are about three types of thoughts I have. It goes in like three hoops. And they are the same thoughts when I go outside in the city. And I was thinking, will that be helpful to write them down so I've got them on a piece of paper and then I can look at them and say, okay, it's not important to think about that when I meditate, for example.
I mean, yeah, what I would do is, if you find it useful, I would definitely do that so it's quite clear to you. But the bottom line is you've got to understand, you need to understand yourself. It's like, say, for example, you know, you're thinking about a certain thing, or there could be three things which, that, you know, it must be important to you, otherwise you could just drop it immediately. So these three things that capture your attention, that you think about maybe on a regular basis, you know, you've got to ask yourself, you know, why am I thinking about these particular things, this, you know, particular persons or events, or it could be absolutely anything in the world. But the bottom line is you need to understand why you feel this way. The bottom line, it's your feelings which drive the thinking process. Thoughts in themselves are quite neutral. They don't have a lot of power. It's your feelings which drive one's thoughts, one's thinking process. So, you know, you need to, you know, that same thing again. You need to, like, you've got to ask yourself, why am I thinking about this person? Why am I thinking about my childhood? Why am I thinking about my workplace? And explore it. Just take one thought at a time, and then spend at least a minute or 2 minutes, and try to understand everything about it. Why do I feel this way? Why am I thinking this way? What is it connected with? At what, you know, what time? What event? So try to understand absolutely, you know, everything. Try to understand everything about it, because this is the test. If you keep thinking about something like for the next 10 to 20 years, it means that you still don't, you haven't understood this thing, whatever it is. It's still hidden from you. There's something that you don't know, you don't understand, because once you understand this thing, once you've seen deeply into this thing, and it becomes like open to you, becomes exposed, you develop full knowledge of this thing. Essentially, it will just dissipate. It will just settle, and the energy behind it, it'll just fade and fade until eventually you can just drop it very, very quickly in time.
Thank you very much, Ajahn. I will do that. Do I have to do that when I meditate? Let's say I think about, I like to organize, I mean, I'm planning in advance about something, but I don't need to do it in meditation. So let's say I can see I'm thinking about planning, and I realize that, so shall I explore in meditation, why am I thinking about that? Is it from previous life or I don't know, anxiety or whatever?
Yeah, what I would do is I would if you've got something which is important to you, you're thinking about something which is important, but I would switch. This is what I do. If I'm not peaceful within, you know, it's different for me because I'm in a protected environment here, but I still have to get involved with stuff. You know, I still get caught up in the world. But if I'm not peaceful, if I'm in the monastery and I'm not peaceful in 5 minutes, I go straight to investigation. I go straight to vipassana. You know, why am I thinking about this particular experience? Why do I feel this way? You know, I need to understand everything about, you know, what I'm going through, and it's obvious. You'll see the the experience start to drop and drop, and the power of the state will slowly, slowly decline over time, because, you know, it's understood that things are not hidden for you. Things are exposed, and then, it starts to dissipate. It starts to dissolve over time. So that's what, I mean, lay life is much, much more busy, more complicated than the life we have in the monastery. But the bottom line is, if you want to see good results, I would do it every couple of minutes. I would do the breathing meditation for a couple of minutes, then I would go straight to investigation on whatever, essentially, that you can't, whatever it is you can't let go of, whatever it is you're attached to, and then, as I mentioned, understand everything about that thing, you know, that event, that past experience, that person. Understand everything about it. And then watch the power of the state, you know, how you'll see the power of the state start to drop over time. Because, you know, for example, somebody's got childhood problems, and the one of the reasons is, it may not be any fault of their own, but one of the reasons is that the troublesome behavior or the problem behavior persist, you know, we can persist for, you know, say in the world we have friends and this and that, easily could persist for, even 10 years or even 15, 20 years, is because the individual concerned doesn't understand the relationship with the parents. They don't, things are hidden from them, they're obscured, they're confused, there's a lack of knowledge, a lack of, unknowing. If parents do not treat their children properly, they can really mess them up, and they can mess them up for a long time, you know. So people in the world, you know, you can hide this stuff, you can disguise this stuff, you can blame other people. But, you know, if you've still got this stuff, it's 50, 60, 70 years of age, it means you still don't understand what happened between you and mum and dad. You know, this stuff is deep. It's you know, when you're a child, it imprints very, very firmly and very, very deeply on the child's mind. And I can stay with you. You can be 70 years of age, and it's still with you. And the reason it's still with you because you still don't understand the relationship with the parents, the emotional based, the feeling relationship. So that's an extreme example, but for the rest of us, we all have our stuff that we have to work with in meditation practice as we live in the world. But that's the bottom line. You need to understand what you're going through, because if you don't, that's the test. If you can't let it go, if you can't release it, if it's still bothering you, if it still keeps coming back 1,001 times, it's because something is hidden from you. There's something you still don't understand, if that makes any sense.
Well, it definitely makes sense to me, Ajahn.
Wonderful, Chris.
You're welcome. Ajahn, we have a question in the chat that's been waiting for a while, so I'd like to read it out to you. Would you be okay?
Yeah, no problem at all. Thanks. Thanks, Chris.
I would like to ask, what are the connections between thoughts and feelings and mind? And in Buddhism, are they important? What are we advised to do about feelings and thoughts?
Your life, the whole direction of your life, your personality, and the way you walk and talk, it revolves around your feelings. I mean, I might sound a bit sort of feminine and sensitive and intuitive, but this is the bottom line. You know, you've got your feelings will drive the whole direction of your life. They will drive your karma and rebirth. When you look at Paticca-samuppada, feelings, you know, clinging, craving, will drive the whole course, the direction of your life, the relationships with other people, what you're interested in, what you love, what you hate, Everything else in between, a million and one things, you know, the your feeling, your feeling experience, your what would you call it? Say intuitive, like emotional intelligence. This is, you know, this is a key thing in Dhamma practice, and it's not to be separated from the mind itself. You know, some teachers can be very analytical or intellectual or philosophical, or, you know, very, very knowledge-based, you know, whatnot, you know, sutta-based or abhidharma-based. But, you know, this is the bottom line. And so when you look at, you know, thoughts and feelings of the mind, you know, you've got to pay a lot of attention to this, because you're not going to be successful in meditation after 20, 25, 30 years. You know, to be successful, I don't want to be a parrot here, but to be successful in meditation, to be successful in life, successful with your relationships with other people, you've got to have emotional intelligence. All meditators will naturally develop that over time, this sensitivity, this intuition, awareness, but you can fast track and accelerate this process by really focusing on emotion, understanding feelings, you know, the way, you know, you've really got to understand emotion. You know, the whole nature of the human being and karma and rebirth, you know, this is absolutely crucial. It's probably, you know, it's probably one of the key factors I've seen. I bumped into a person there yesterday, and it usually doesn't happen very often, but this, you know, I could feel it straight away. I was talking with my mum, was getting her I had to talk with the clinical nurse specialist, you know, this and that, you know, it takes my mother out for the day. But this person was I think she's a nurse, my mother said. She was helping out with one of the clients across the hall from my mother. And I could instantly, I knew this person was different. You know, her heart was completely open, very, you know, very kind, compassionate, and very friendly and warm, and talking and conversing. And I knew, even though the women, the carers, the nurses, largely female, on the staff there at my mother's facility, very, very good people. You know, you've got to have the personality for the nursing, the caring professions. But I could instantly, within 30 seconds, I knew this person was different. And she came up to me later, before we left the facility, and she'd been a white robed nun in Thailand for 5 years. I think in brown for maybe about 6 months, I think, maybe maximum six. But you could see it, you know, you could see, even though the other women on the ward there at Hastings, you know, the personalities are very good, but this particular lady was, she was very different. You could see it immediately. And that's 5 years, five solid years, I'll call it 5.5 years of solid meditation. And then you see the effect on the personality. You see very good human qualities coming to the surface level of the mind.
Nikki, would you like to come?
Yeah, hi, I didn't think I'd have time. Thank you. Thank you, Ajahn. Thank you for your... can't get the camera working. Like Martha, you answered some of the things. As I was going through the process of what you were saying, Ajahn, there was the breaking down to an inch, square inch. That was fab. And I found myself... that got quite difficult because I lost body sense. I could, couldn't then focus. I couldn't feel my body, so then I couldn't concentrate on the feeling. So then when you brought the breath in, that was great. And then I noticed these thoughts, very intense thoughts. I've been aware of these for years, and like you said, I've investigated them outside of meditation, but they're still quite strong in meditation. Mm. And it was behind the thoughts was hurt or fear. And then I had a thought, which I don't know if this is right. It was like, well, and I've got sick of these thoughts, I've got sick of them, I'm bored of them, I don't, you know, it's like, yes. Then I thought, well, what does it matter? Because it was about hurt and fear of the future or hurt by people. And I thought, well, I'm going to die anyway. So what? Why be attached or cling on to this feeling? And then the meditation stopped, so I didn't go any further from there. But what do you think?
All right. So say if I had a very pronounced thought process rolling, you know, driven by my emotions, but this is another approach. Say for example, if I was an individual who my mind was just moving at 100 miles an hour. And I'm a meditator. I'm trying to be peaceful in day to day life, but my mind is absolutely crazy. It just won't stop. You know, it's just constantly moving day and night, day and night. So what I would do with this is another tool that you can use, and with each person, it will work to a certain degree, depending what kind of person you are. You just watch, just very, very relaxed, very gently. You just watch the thinking process. You, like as an observer. I'm just observing, just watching the thinking, especially the thinking, because that it's visual. It's going to be visual and auditory. Because I'm male, I don't have very strong. What's the right word? I don't have like very, very strong feelings. Very, very, very strong emotions on a minute to minute basis. I can be quite expressive, but I don't have, maybe like with women would probably tend to have much stronger emotions than I would. But with this whole approach, you know, watching thinking, and you can actually get insight. You know, say for example, if I'm just thinking, and it won't stop, I can actually develop just this natural. Insight, relaxed insight, just by watching the thinking process, and that will actually bring up an understanding. Why I think the way I do, the way I think about what things, and the insight will actually come naturally over time. So you know, my method may work for some people to a degree, but all of us have to work with different tools, because we all have different karma. And life experience, so people can generate natural insight just by watching the thinking process as an observer. They can still develop a degree of sharpness, a degree of mindfulness in daily life. But you put it to the test. You just watch the thinking, and you can watch the madness, the confusion, the apprehension, the fear. You know, this and that, and this and that. But it will actually bring you. A degree of insight, because you're watching the way it works, you're watching the way it moves, the direction it takes, and why it moves that way, and what it's connected with, and why it's important. You know, if you're a person who just struggles to get calm at all, after years, 5 years, 6 years, you can put that one to the test, that particular technique, and then that will give you a degree of insight. Why you think the way you do, and you can possibly even use that as a bridge to to more peaceful meditations in time. You know, there is the darkness meditation. I don't know, some people may feel it's okay, some people may feel it's not good at all, but with every single one of us, you know, the any Dhamma teacher, meditation teacher will give you a range of techniques, but you have to put them to the test to see what works for oneself.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ajahn.
Ajahn, we have one. Thank you too, Nikki. We have one more question in the chat. Are you okay if I read it to you?
Yeah, no problem at all, Chris.
Thank you. Is it possible to contemplate non-self to a state of stillness akin to a deep meditation? I find that I can still not my mind though this through this contemplation. I just wonder if I should invest daily time on this in lieu of meditation.
Yeah, I mean, that yeah, sounds like a very good technique. Sounds like it's working well for you. So I would definitely move in that direction. You know, the bottom line is, you know, if you're moving in a particular direction with Dhamma practice, meditation practice, that's exactly the way that you should go at that point in time. And it, yeah, there was absolutely no doubt whatsoever. If you're in contemplating an investigation and you're investigating, you get calm, you get peaceful. It's quite obvious to me that's the way you should go. But you know, you can do things like, you know, you can do that kind of approach. And if you choose, you can go back to the breath, or you can focus on the stillness. So, you know, if you're able to see some stillness through this inner contemplation of the self, which is quite impressive actually. Yeah, because it's a little bit like an advanced technique, but and then so you can see the stillness becomes obvious. So I'm investigating the self, contemplating the self, and then I start to get calm and peaceful, and the mind becomes more still. Then what I would do as a potential, as a skill, is to focus on the stillness, to focus on any peace which is there. And see how deep you can go into the mind by focusing on any calm and stillness which is there. And then if the mind starts to become maybe active again, then you can start investigating the self, you know, one's thoughts, one's feelings, personality. And then you become calm again, and then you focus on the stillness, on the peace. And then you may have to go, you know, even for myself, I mean, I could easily use 3 to 4 techniques, you know, in the course of a day, easily, because you know you need to be adaptable, flexible, in your approach, especially with meditation. You know, meditation is very, you know, very much a feely practice. It's an intuitive, emotionally based practice to a very large degree. And people who do very well with meditation, it means they've got their emotional intelligence is quite pronounced. So that same thing again, just moving back and forth, focusing between stillness, contemplation of self. That may work, may work quite well for you for some time, but you know, it may not be the be all and end all. You may have to bring other things. You know, I can think of about a dozen things that I use on a week to week basis easily to get results with the meditation. So, like with all of us, we have with all the Dhamma practitioners, meditators, we have a toolbox, and we have all our favorite tools, all the useful tools that we have are in that toolbox. And then you have to experiment. You pick up a certain tool, and then you work with the tool for a while. If it does, you know, it may work quite well for some time, and then it starts to lose its shine. It starts to lose its capability, its potential, and then you may have to put that tool down and pick up another one. And that will work very well for a time. So, you know, you've got this kind of format. You've got a box of tools, and then you have to do what works for you in time, because you know, all of us, we're so complicated emotionally, and the thoughts that we think and our karmas, you know, you're looking at millions of past experiences. So, you know, if you're able to just get your mind peaceful, just even on a day-to-day basis, you know, it's not to be underestimated when you've got this endless, unlimited storehouse of karma behind you, slowly working up through the surface level of the mind. You know, so that same thing again, you know, you've got to be, what's the right word? You've got to be, you need to be skillful with practice to really get good results. I mean, some of us it's going to be easier, some of us it'll be more difficult, but that's the bottom line is how to work with emotions, being skillful, being adaptable, flexible, in order to get good results over 10, 20, 30 years.
Thank you, Ajahn, for this evening. Ajahn, would you be so kind as to leave us with a blessing?
Yep, no problem at all, Chris.
Thank you.
Okay. Ayuto balato jiro Vanato patipanato Sukasa jata medawi Sukam so adikachati Ayum data wa balam vanam Sukancha patipanato Tikhayu yasa wa hoti Yata yatu papachati.